Good morning, everybody. It's wonderful to see everyone. We are going to continue with our learning today. We're going to focus again. We're looking at the life cycle of the Jewish life. And we've now moved from birth, and right after birth, we get into a new stage, which is the area of the Shalom Zohar, the Simchat Bat, trying to understand what's going on over here and appreciate this. So thank you for joining today. This is our part two. Before we go on, I want to take a moment to thank Suri Stern, who's sponsoring Baruch Hashem this entire series for all of this learning. It actually is wedged between. We've just come out of the yard site of Suri's grandmother, which was just this last week, and this coming week we enter the yard sites of both her father and her grandson. Suri's father, Harav Ruvain ben Chaim v'Esther, Rabbi Ruby Davis, was a person who finished Shas many times. Was also known as a Gabbai Rishon, the White Shul, for many years, for over four decades, and was involved in honoring many of the people attending the minyan and avoiding machlokes all those years. And anybody who's been involved in Gabbaos knows that that's the first job description of the Gabbai. He was a very quiet and humble man. Nishmosai Eden. We're also going to be learning Vila Nishmas. Suri just lost a grandson in the past, how many years now? It's been.
This is the first yard site.
Is for Yedid ben Shai Tzviva Esther Shifra. He was born, unfortunately, the cord is wrapped around his neck and did not survive. Suri wanted to just also acknowledge organizations Knafaim and Neshama, which were very helpful during this time. It's a very difficult time, and it turns out that his yahrzeit is the day before your father's yahrzeit, and it's very meaningful that the two of them are together. It's just very painful at the same time. I'd like to thank this shiur today. I'd like to thank Ed and Sandy, who are also sponsoring today's learning, as we are noting the yahrzeit of the outgoing yahrzeit of Tessie Schwartz, Herzke Bas Shmuel Feivel, and that's your grandmother, and Lili Nishmas Anita Kolak Chava Bas Moshe, that's Ed's aunt, and it's also coming up as we enter the yahrzeit of Ed's grandfather Moshe Ben Sandal Olav HaSholem this coming week as well. There's no doubt there's so much they have to be proud of, and Bezer Hashem they'll continue to do so for many, many years to come. Let us start our learning together and appreciate this. This is a stage which we all go through in some way or another. How do we interpret this? What is going on over here? So we hear this idea of Shalom Zohar. Where does it come from? Oh, I'm so sorry. Thank you. We have a last minute sponsor. Thank you. Thank you for reminding me. Elliot and Shandy Horowitz are sponsoring also today's learning. Linishwas David Ben Rav Yaakov. This is Shandy's brother, Olav HaSholem, on Yud Dalet Teves. So that will be in 2 days' time. That's going to be coming in Tuesday night, right? Thank you. Thank you for making today the context of the learning. Let us learn Torah together. So here we go. The question is where? How do we know we do this? Like, where does this come from precisely, that we do this thing called a Shalom Zohar? So the truth is that actually is mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch, but not really the Shulchan Aruch, is mentioned in the Ramah. The Ramah is Rav Moshe Isserles, who is the Ashkenazi notes on the Shulchan Aruch, and he makes note in the center of Hilchos Bris Milah, where the discussion moves to the notion of making a Seuda at the Bris. The Ramah makes a whole discussion about having a Seuda, being careful to make sure that people are not invited and don't come. You have to be careful about brises. These days, it's complicated. If you have an evite, you know, how are you, I'm not just telling you, I'm not really inviting you through the evite. But nonetheless, so you'll notice on bris invitations, it says announcing the bris rather than inviting you to the bris. You shouldn't invite people to brises, because if you're invited to a sudas bris, the Gemara talks about there being a curse upon a person who is invited and doesn't come. So you don't want to, you have to be careful as a bal simcha. You know, when you say, come, you have to be careful when it comes to a bris. You want to make sure that you announce it, but it's not that people feel, people are invited and they don't make it their way downwards. I always try, even if I can't stay, just to take something so I wasn't in that situation. But be it as it may, That's what Ramah talks about. And then at the end of his comments, he says the following line. He says that v'od nohagu, there is a custom, la'asos su'uda, to make a meal, u'mishte, b'leil Shabbos, on the night of Shabbos, la'achar shenolad zachar, after a young man is born, that Shabbos following, to make a festive meal on the Shabbos night, this is also a Surah Mitzvah to have this. That's what the Ramah says, and he's quoting the Truma Sadeshin, and earlier one of the Rishon, Rav Isserlin. Okay, so why do we do this precisely? Like, it's very nice, but to call something a Surah Mitzvah is a very high bar. For instance, if you eat a meal on Hanukkah, that's not called a Surah Mitzvah unless you add to it Torah and Shirim V'Tishbachos. But now when it comes to Shon Zachar, sounds like we're out of the gates and it's already Surah Mitzvah. Why is this? There are many, many, many reasons. I'd like to move through five different reasons which will help us inform ourselves about, first of all, why we do this and our conduct that we should be displaying at Shalom Zachar as well. The first is a very interesting idea I saw actually in the Nefesh HaRav, Rav Shechter. Rav Shechter and Rav Shechter actually will be here in the next at 9:45. I highly recommend everybody stay to hear Rav Shechter himself. And he makes the following observation, that the Rambam says that when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, then it should be done by the sages. It should be led by the leaders of the generation, should be those who are Mechalel Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh. So if there's a situation where, God forbid, there's a need to Mechalel Shabbos, it shouldn't be that, you know, somebody is sent to do it. Really, the rabbi should go do it first. Why? Because that displays the significance of Pikuach Nefesh. You're not being machmir on Shabbos, you're being machmir on Pikuach Nefesh. You have to be careful. So he makes the observation that for the first few days after a baby is born, the mother is in a state of Pikuach Nefesh. It's a Cholesh Yesh Boi Sakana. And that being the case, there may be hesitations come the first Shabbos, is what do I need to do if necessary? What must I do? So Rav Shechter's observation is that it would be the custom of the Rabbonim to go to visit her on the first Shabbos as an indicator of the significance of looking after herself. Lest it be necessary for her to do something necessary for herself. That's the way it should be done. And when the Rabbonim would go and visit on a Friday night, the new mother, then everybody else would come and they make a party. But the point is it started off as an affirmation of the mother and the affirmation of her needs on Shabbos. Very fascinating and beautiful, beautiful idea, which is noted in the Nefesh HaRav. That's more off the beaten track. We don't hear that perspective. Let's come back to some of the more well-known ideas. So the Gemara does describe it as a passing Gemara, because this Gemara is not actually addressing this particular topic. It's actually the introduction to another topic, where the Gemara describes that Rav and Shmuel and Rav Asi, so these are the leaders of the generation, would go Iklu'u, they entered into Lebay, to the house Shavua Habein, of the week of the sun. Or some call it a bay, the house of Yeshua Habein, the salvation of the sun. So, and then, by the way, that's not the topic of the Gemara. The Gemara is describing whether or not to enter into this particular household. So what does it mean precisely? Rashi says, well, if it's called a Shavua Habein, which means the week of the sun, then Rashi explains that it's referring to this notion of a bris milah. Ad she'avro alav shiva yomim. So maybe it's referring to a bris seuda. That's what Rashi says. However, the Tosos quotes Rabbeinu Tam, who's Rashi's grandson, who disagrees and says that really, actually, the word Yeshua or Yeshua can mean a salvation, but it can also mean a redemption. What does that mean? So says Rabbeinu Tam, this child just survived one of the most terrifying ordeals, childbirth. I mean, the baby is moving from receiving oxygen in utero from the mother in a split second to being able to breathe. This child is having its umbilical cord cut. Its entire body is being contracted through a very small space to be able to get out. There are so many things which this is a terrifying moment. So when it works out, then there's a su'udah of Yeshua Habein, of salvation. And therefore, the way Rabbeinu Tam views the Shalom Zohar piece is actually a festive meal of thanksgiving, of salvation, of the fact that this was a successful time. And as we know, this is not ever to be taken for granted. So part of what we're doing is not so much the function of the elders visiting the mother, as Rav Shetter was suggesting, but this is a function of, in a certain sense, conveying the thanksgiving for that this child has arrived safely.
Rabbi,
yes.
Quick question before we go any further: do we understand Ben to mean Ben or Bat?
We're gonna get there in a second. We're gonna get there in a second. Let's go through all the reasons, and then we'll come back to the Bat in a second, because it's a really excellent question. So this is idea number two. Idea number three is actually suggested the Taz, the Turei Zav, one of the commentators on Shulchan Aruch, quotes a Medrash, which appears in Parashas Emor, which describes a very interesting mashal, it's a parable, in which it describes that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will not accept a Korban, ad shetavor alav Shabbos, until Shabbos has passed over that korban. And the mashal for that is a king who says, I will not meet any of my guests until I will not give an audience to my guests unless they see first the matronissa, the matron. Now, what the position specifically of the matron is in relationship, is it the queen, is it his concierge, who is the matron in the king's palace? It's hard to understand the relationship of the king to the matron. But nonetheless, this, says the Medrash, refers to two things that we do in halacha. First is that we know that in Parshas Emor, which is where this Medrash is describing, is you cannot bring a korban of an animal until the animal's 8 days old. Okay, so the halacha is you're not allowed to take an animal to bring as a korban till the animal is 8 days old. And similarly, it's viewed that a bris milah is actually seen as the same process. The bris milah in many ways is seen as a korban, as a sacrifice of sorts. And that sacrifice cannot be done until after 8 days. Why? The Midrash is giving us a little bit of the color to that. Why? So that there should be a Shabbos, that's the matronissa, that this is the matron who first sees the child. Whether that's a spiritual chizuk for the child to go through in order to be able to, so to speak, go out the other side, to be able to emerge successful. Shabbos is an ingredient necessary for this process of korban or mini korban experience as well. That's what the Taz suggest. Very, very fascinating. A fourth idea is, and this is a lesser known idea, and this is very, very important to think about, is that the Gemara tells us in Nida that on Daf Lamed Aleph and Beis, that Rabbi Yitzchak quotes Rabbi Ami, who says, "Kevan shebo zachar ba'olam, bo shalom ba'olam." When a male son is born, enters peace into the world. Fascinating. Okay, so and then quotes a pasuk in Yeshayahu, which makes a word play on Zachar or Zekar. Okay, so what does that mean? So some suggest that when one makes a Seudas Shalom Zachar, it's a communal thing. You let everybody know, and people are aware, and it's an opportunity. It says because this is the time now where people who may have a sichsuch, may have a little bit of a disagreement, there may be things that weren't going right in their lives, now is a time where you have an open invitation where you can go to wish Mazel Tov and not stand out, right? It's not going to be that you're making a special appointment and now you're and it brings back all the animosity. Now's the time you can go over and make amends. You can wish Mazel Tov and it helps, you know, so to speak, bring down the temperature at this opportunity. So Shalom Zachar, and that perhaps would be what the Aruch HaShem suggests, and this perhaps suggests why the name of it might be a Shalom Zachar, not just greeting and, so to speak, Shalom the Zachar, but Shalom as actually in the notion of peace. Is this is the opportunity to create peace again. It takes a lot to do this kind of thing. And in fact, actually, it's important to think about times where you can do a mitzvah where there's a sechsoch. I was once involved in something. Actually, I wasn't involved. That was the problem. There was an organization that I was involved with, and somebody lost their job, and I didn't get involved because I didn't know the details. I didn't know what happened. It was a she said situation. I didn't know what it was, and I didn't get involved, and it was always held against me that I didn't get involved, that I should have done more to defend this person that I just didn't know. I wasn't involved, and I wasn't going to put myself in the ring, but I knew that that this person harbored resentment against me, and it's very painful, because when you know that somebody harbors resentment against you, and you see them around, and you can see the pain in their eyes, and you don't mean to cause these things, but these things happen. So I tried, actually. What I did was, on Purim, I went and I delivered Mishloach Manos. And it wasn't the right time. It wasn't the right time for them. But it was helpful, because afterwards we made a meeting and we sat down and discussed it. I apologized for my inaction. I explained why I wasn't able to and I should have done more. But nonetheless, when there's a mitzvah opportunity, it's an opportunity to try to bridge. It's a try to bridge. So we're coming up on a bris. It's a communal event. Shalom Zachar. You go in, you wish Mazel Tov. It's an opportunity to be able to sort of make, to start that process again. As Aruch HaSchaim says, another perspective. And then, of course, the most famous perspective is the last one that we're going to look at today. And that is the very, very famous Gemara Nedar Daf Lamed Amud Beis. Tells us, during the utero, it describes the process of a child. It says, V'ner daluk loy al rosho. That the child, in when it's in utero as a fetus, has a candle above its head. And can see from one end of the world to the other end of the world. Quoting Apostle Kaniyov. And then the Gemara goes on to say, there's no better time in the life of a human being than this time in utero. Quoting Apostle in describing how being protected by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, seeing across the whole world, and famously the Gemara says, the entire Torah is taught at such a moment. And then it describes how, according to Pasuk, based on this as well. So a very profound description over here of living in this space, and the drisha and many comment that part of the Shalom Zachar, in a certain sense, is a nichum avelim. What's the nichum avelim? Is that when the child is born, comes the angel and sotra al piv and closes, so to speak, when it slaps upon the mouth. And the Torah is forgotten, and woe upon the that loss. So he comes to literally be Menachem, newly born as well. It is worthwhile knowing that the Maharal understands this Gemara. Before going further, the Maharal understands what this means. What does it mean, ner daluk al rosh, or the candles above the head? Is that that during pregnancy, it's understood that the neshama is not fully attached to the child yet. So as you know, as when you get into the whole abortion debate, which is very much what was raging just a little while back, the overthrowing of Roe versus Wade. In the Christian world, it's understood that the child has a soul already, right? So in Judaism, it's more complex than that. Now, not getting to the halacha and the complexity of it right now, but the way it's understood is that the soul will fully attach to the child once it emerges, once the child is born. But at that beforehand, the ner Hashem Nishmas Adam, that soul is floating above, or is close to the child, but not actually fully attached. And therefore, because it's not tethered, it has more omniscience than it does if it were to be tethered to a material form, which is why it's tzofemi b'amisafo alamad tzofo, which has what it has further perspective, it has bigger perspective, because remember, what you're essentially doing is you're taking a piece of infinity, which is a soul, and you're stuffing the bottom end into a material container. That's really what it is. The soul of a human being does not fit into the human being. The human being is considered in Kabbalistic literature as the shoe, right? The very bottom of the neshama fits into the shoe. That's the body. The neshama is much bigger than the person. In fact, so like when a person goes to sleep and we talk about drifting parts in the neshama, we've learned this beforehand, it means to say the upper spheres of the neshama are now less tethered and are able in dreams to visit other spaces. But the lowest part is, so to speak, tethered to this very finite, very material, very limited container. Okay, so when a person's born, that's when Sotra al-Piv, the Maharal actually says, Stira, is actually where now it's being merged into this body. That's what limits its entire perspective in the world. And why is the mouth? Because the mouth is the only place that's going to now help it express itself as a spiritual being, not just a physical being. Now, believe me, most people use their mouths to eat most of the time. So that's not what the Maharal was talking about. He was saying the other way around, is when we express ourselves, when we show the beauty of who we are, through a kind word, through learning Torah, through tefillah, when we're with that's when we differentiate ourselves from apes, right? That's when we are no longer just a material, you know, a material two-legged being with opposable thumbs walking around. That differentiates us. So that would be what's going on over there. Now, take it a little further. It is interesting to note that why does this happen? Therefore, on Shabbos. So why is this the place this loss is expressed? And so there's a number of thoughts which relate to this. Rav Yaakov Emden points out that maybe we're doing this on Shabbos because we say Zachor is Yom HaShabbos. It's the day where we sort of remember. We're remembering back to the Torah which was lost. We're remembering back on a day which is dedicated to memory as well. Another possibility might be is that we're remembering back to that moment in the womb where the child had this capacity, had the ability to be able to go further. The Vilna Gaon actually famously comments in Mishlei at the end of a life, there's an angel which will approach the person who passed away and ask them if they fulfilled their obligation in this world. And the Vilna Gaon famously comments and says it's the same angel that slapped the child in the face, which means at the beginning, the angel set the child into motion and said, "Nu, what's going to be?" At the end, we know what the final exam is going to be, is did you use your time? Did you use the space you were given to be able to achieve everything that you had the capacity to as well? Which is what's happening over here. So the problem is what happens in between, because we're kind of stuck in the middle, right? We're not in the place where we don't remember it all. We're not in that space of omniscience, and we're not at the end. We're in this very limited space in the middle. So how do we keep aspiring to that point? So perhaps, maybe an observation could be that every Shabbos is a reminder that we're not just running on that rat wheel. Maybe every Shabbos is a Zachor Yom HaShabbos, is to remind us of our higher calling, which is what starts the first Shabbos when a baby is born, is this Shalom Zachar. We're remembering what we could be doing. And that's what really happens and reminds us the rest of our lives as to maybe to be able to answer that question that we're going to be asked by that same Malach that limited us into the space that we are, which is what allows us forward as well. Before going a little further, so if we just recap for a second and then address Chaya's question is, so what about the girls? Right, which is a good question. Is what happened to the girls? So if we do a quick recap of all of these reasons, some of them apply and some of them don't apply in a specific case. So if you remember, going back to the affirmation of the mother, the care of the mother, that absolutely applies whether the mother had a baby girl or a baby boy. When it comes to Thanksgiving, that should apply equally to either. When it comes to the greeting before the bris, that notion of the idea of this being, so to speak, the safeguard before the bris, that seems to be more bris related. So it seems to be a precursor to the bris. In fact, some would even argue that the reason why there's a Shalom Zachar in an extension of this is that not everybody is able to make it to the bris. But a Friday night is a time, as the Chumash Zedeshin said, where people are around. And we all know this. There's times where we've been made it to the Shalom Zachar, but we simply can't make it to the bris for whatever reason. So it's very much bris related. That case is actually not as connected to a baby girl being born. A time for reconciliation, I don't know why, but the Gemara does describe it as Omer Rabbi Yisrael Rabbi Avin, Kevin Shabbos Zachar Ba'olam, Nichnas Shalom Ba'olam. I'm not sure why that's specifically related to, but the Gemara does seem to say that's specific to Ben Zachar. But when it comes to the fifth reasoning, when it comes to the loss of Torah, generally speaking, it's interesting over here, we Baruch Hashem are living in a generation where women are learning Torah and able to do this for time immemorial, not as a function even of Judaism, but in general, in society, women did not have the opportunity of education until very recently. And Baruch Hashem, it's become a time where, in fact, the women not only are learning, but teaching and are role models in teaching of Torah today in an outstanding way. And so this reason actually today is much more applicable as well. It's interesting because if you look at Rav Yaakov Emden's commentary, he's got a sefer called Migdal Oz, in which he has a paragraph called Birkas Elokim, and he talks about the Shalom Zachar over here. He pointed out that women are less in this specific sphere because they have less mitzvahs, which they have to learn about as well. Right? So there's less Torah that there's necessary for a woman to learn. However, just putting that in perspective, today, Baruch Hashem, there's so much learning which is going on, not as a, not necessarily as a chiyuv, but as a kiyum, certainly, as opting in, because it might not be as obligatory, but certainly in a very real way is learning, and therefore this would apply as well. So being as that is the case, you'll see different perspectives. So if you go back to the poskim from a few hundred years ago, they say this is specifically bris related. This is for a son. Today there are those, and there's been suggestions even in Jehendo, in Rav Yaakov Emden himself, who raises the idea that this should equally be so for the birth of a girl as well. And people in certain communities are very careful about making a simchas bas as well. I will make the observation that it does, when it comes to a girl, there's a little more flexibility. Meaning, if the notion of the Thanksgiving and the notion of the loss of the Torah and so on, all these things, these are all applicable ideas, but there's not as much of a rush to have to do it the first Shabbos, which is actually more liberating, to be honest. It was such a pleasure having our first daughter. Because, you know, with a son, what happens is you have the whole world trampling you through your house, right? The first, you know, it could be a day later, it could be the same day, right? You have to figure out the bris and the moil and the caterer and the everything. And then if it's the first and you're working out a pigeon or a ben immediately when you finish it, it's a very public and it's very difficult to do all those things. It's very traumatizing, certainly as a young couple, to be able to organize those things. When it comes to the girl, everybody should make a kiddush. But you can do that when you want to. You can make sure the family comes in. You can figure out when everybody's around. The mother can really be there, and everybody can actually give a speech in the appropriate time. It's much easier, I think, in a certain sense. A son's birth and a son's simcha is very public. A woman's is much more private, and it gives us the space to do it in a certain sense more appropriately as well. So it is, and there are people who do simchas bas, and that's wonderful. But in a certain sense, you can fulfill most of all of these things that are related to a baby being born, but with a little more latitude. There's a little more space, which actually makes it perhaps, in my experience, a lot more meaningful, and everybody can actually be there as opposed to when it's everybody forced in as well. Yes, Elia.
Yeah, you cited the basis.
Excellent. We're going to get there in a second. Hang on for that. Is Alan? Yes.
According to the first.
Yes.
If the woman is not home.
Good question. We'll get there in a second. So these are all good questions. All good questions. Abby, you have to share your thoughts. You have to share your thoughts. You have to share your thoughts. Share your thoughts. No. Yeah. I'd love to hear. Okay. Anyway. So yes. Achaya.
We don't make a
suda for what?
Sham Zachar.
Oh, good question.
Down to Arbis and beer.
Good question. Good question. Okay, good. So let's address all those questions one by one. These are all good questions. So let's talk about the Sfaradim first of all. So as Elliot pointed out, this is brought in the Ramah. Rav Moshe Isserlin does not appear in the Shulchan Aruch, and he's quoting Trumas Adeshin, Rav Isserlin, who is also a European Posek as well, not a Sephardic. He's not Spanish. He's not coming from the Middle Eastern Poskim as well. So that being the case, what happens, truth is that the Sfaradim do not do a Shalom Zachar. But instead, they've got a much better option, which is called a Brit Yitzchak, for those who are familiar. And in fact, the Brit Yitzchak is not found in a regular Sfaradi Seder because it's bigger than it can fit in the Sfaradi Seder. So what is it? If you have ever had the opportunity, a zechut, of being at a Brit Yitzchak, it is the night before the Brit itself. Everybody gathers in the house where the baby is. And by the way, this could be on a Friday night. Actually, there's a fellow in our shul just had the white sederim in our shul is a function of a fellow called Gabi Badalov, who lives just a few doors down. He's a wonderful, wonderful person. And he davens there during the week. He davens in Sfaradi Minyan on Shabbos. And he said, our shul should have Sfaradi Seder. Baruch Hashem, we have any davens. And so just a few weeks ago, he had a son. And the bris was on Shabbos, so guess what? The Brit Yitzchak was a Shalom Zachar. But that wasn't because it was a Shalom Zachar. So what is the Brit Yitzchak? Is people come together in the house, and there are passages that are read from the Torah, from the Nevi'im, from the Ksuvim, and then passages read from the Mishnah, and then also from the Zohar, all relating to the covenant of the Bris Milah. And it's long, it's extensive. So what people usually do, if you've seen this, it's very special, is they have these booklets with the Brit Yitzchak, and they divide it up. So you take X, Y, so many pages, you take, and then there's Tehillim, which is said, and then there's a Yirat and a Ribbon Shalolam, which is said at the beginning and the end, and this is all said in the presence of the baby, and the baby's there, and there's a little bit of a Su'udah beforehand. So why did they choose the night beforehand and not the Shabbos? Interesting question. This is, by the way, this is very clearly related to Bris. This is not about, this is a precursor to the Bris, so why? So the Zohar actually says in Parshas Lech Lecha recounts such a prayer practice that people would describe Torah and Tefillah the all night before a baby is born. It's very similar to other things, like when you see a Chanukah Sabayis, is a very long passage that's supposed to be said, people break it up. It's also very similar to Tikkun Chatzos, or also Tikkun Leil. Most people don't know that there's actually a format what should be said on Tikkun Leil. It's the beginning and ending of every book in Torah. And it's actually a format, and for those who said, I tried 1 year to do it, it's very extensive, is that people spend the whole night going through the first parak of Bereshit, the last parak of Bereshit, right? The first parak of Shemos, the last parak, and it goes all the way through, all the way through as well. So there's a fixed text. People say this fixed text together, and there's a celebration which is said why. So a number of the Matei Moshe quotes this Zohar and says that there's a kitrug, there's a criticism of the Satan, the night before the bris, because this child, by entering into the bris, is now going to have a certain degree of salvation as being a Jew. This is, for a man, this is the only way in. And so at the gateway of that access is a time when there's a lot of kitrug, and we try to alleviate, we try to protect the child by being in the presence of it, doing it as well. This, you know why it's so interesting, why it's the night before? This is such an interesting discussion in Halacha as well. Is the Gemara describes that an Orel, a uncircumcised man is not considered a Yisrael, and therefore is precluded from certain things. So let's say you have an Orel Kohen. Let's say you have an uncircumcised Kohen. That Kohen is not allowed to use Truma as well, right? So then the question becomes, is what happens during the 7 days before the Bris? Is that Orel, is that child considered an Orel not to benefit from Truma? You say, well, what kind of Truma is that child going to be eating? Right? It's nursing. So the Gemara says, no. What happens if there's certain types of oil that you want to anoint, you want to use on that child's skin, and that's, let's say, Truma oil. Can the child benefit from oil in a state of pre-Bris Milah? The Gemara says, no. Yes. You know why? Because before the Bris Milah, the child's not an Orel. Because when is the Chiyuv, when is the obligation to become under the covenant of Abraham? Is on the eighth day. So before then, the child's not an Orel. He wasn't commanded. An Orel is a person who is commanded but yet desisted for whatever reason. So then the question becomes, and you may think this is like, it would call legal fiction, but it's worthwhile appreciating this, is what about the night of the eighth night? So do you say that the obligation of Bris Milah only starts on the morning, or do you say the responsibility starts at night, but the possibility of being Mekayim doesn't yet, which means there's a gap? The child could be considered an Orel for the night, just so to speak, by a legal loophole. Why? The obligation may be there, but the possibility of fulfilling it is not there yet, which perhaps I would say relates to what the Zohar is saying. Is the child on the cusp of joining, but can't yet till the morning? Why? So what do? We do a protective, what was that? The Torah tells us, b'yom hashmini yimol basar alasai. So that being the case, that's the space where protection is needed and afforded to this child as well. Very, very fascinating. It's a beautiful thing to do if you have the opportunity of attending a Brit Yitzchak. Like, this relates to it as well. Let's go a little further as well. Yes, okay, so the Hasidim have this thing which is based on the same idea. It's less, we'll call it universal, but there is this notion of Vachnacht, where you bring children, in fact, to get candy, to say Shema Yisrael and to say HaMalach HaGoel. And part of that is affording protection to the child in the same way as well. Let me tell you, the Chassidim have a much faster process than the Svaradim, okay? Because the Brit Yitzchak is much more extensive. It's a beautiful thing. My children have done it many, many times. I remember actually during COVID, there was a number of times where I brought my kids by the window of somebody the night beforehand who was about to do a COVID bris with all six people involved. That's right. And there's wonderful times. But the Vachnach is an approximation of this idea, in addition to the Shalom Zachar as well. But for the Sardin, this is the main time is done, is the night beforehand as well. Very, very beautiful practice which emerges separately from this Ramah. What am I supposed to serve at the Shalom Zachar precisely? So Chai made a point, and that if you read the Ramah, The Ramah says it is, it's supposed to be a su'uda, a su'udas mitzvah, right? So that being the case, so what has happened? So the truth is that today it seems that the practice seems to be more candies and blue pretzels and stuff like that, right? And so on, which is great, but really truth be told, it really would be special if you could have something which is more Surah-esque. And I know that sometimes we feel it's like a little too fancy when the kugel's going around and the small plates are chalim, but there should be something more substantial as well as a Sa'udah. And because it is a celebration in and of itself. Part of that also relates to what we talk about during it. We'll get that in a second. But of course, you're all familiar with the notion that people try to have Arbis. Why is that? So one could relate to this notion of Avelos. It's a circular... it's circular, but about the cycle of life, which is our discussion these days. But it could also be because in Arbis in Yiddish relates to Harbo Arbe Ezarachokhe Hashamayim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu give a blessing that we should be increased, Harbe Arbe, and this is a Yiddish word which approximates it, which if Yiddish is working, then I'm sure we could find other brachas like on the night of Rosh Hashanah to find that are related to it as well. But it's certainly possible. Where should we make it? So truth is, it really should be where the baby is. It really should be where the baby is, because if we're going to take it, certainly where the mother is for the idea of giving the support to the mother, which is one of the reasons. But for the Shalom Zachor, this child should pass through Shabbos with Torah, with songs. So the baby should be there. It's not always possible, right? So sometimes you'll have the children, the young parents will be in a small apartment. And they just can't do it. It's very hard to do it. And so maybe they'll do it in a friend's apartment, as an example. It just might be practical in such a way. It may be that they're staying at their parents, but then the child will be there, which is fine. Sometimes you'll have it where they're in hospital, right? So the baby's born on a Friday afternoon. I always tell in that situation, the real Shalom Zachor is in room 313, you know, so it's that's where it's really at. We're just doing the echo. But be it as one is allowed to still make a Shalom Zachor in the absence of the child, but really preferably the child should be there as well. And that does not mean the child should be passed around, although I've seen such things. The child should not be there with lots of spluttering, sneezing people. In fact, today, in shul, these days when I go to shul, the last few weeks, it sounds like a spluttering contest, you know. I go to shul every day, and it's just like during the silent Shemona Ezra, cough, splutter, sneeze the whole time. It's not the right season, so don't bring the child out, okay? But if the child's in the same house, that would be the appropriate way to do it, if at all possible. Should the mother be present? And the truth is, a lot of times the mother's recovering, and this is a very difficult time. As well, it is discussed. I saw that one of the Achronim mentions that it's special for her to partake in the Surah Smitzvah as well. But if that's possible, again, it's not always possible. And in many cases, she's just not up to it as well. And so it doesn't need to be in the public space. But if she is up to it, wants to be part of it and is able to be there for part of it, that's a wonderful thing as well. And there is a special mitzvah for the mother to be partake in that su'udah as well, if possible as well. What happens if the baby is born on a Friday night? So our first son is born 12:55 a.m. on Friday night. So when does the Shalom Zachor, is that it? You done? Right, okay, that's a little cheaper, right, to arrange that. So there is a discussion in the Achronim about this, but generally understood the Shalom Zachor will then go to the next Friday night, which will mean it's a Shabbos package, right? All the guests are going to be there the whole time. Friday night, bris, su'udah, it's going to be one long party, which is wonderful as well. If the bris is delayed, so unfortunately sometimes you already know by Shabbos that the bris is not going to be on its given day, there is a discussion as to do you wait or do you do the Shalom Zachor right away, right? So sometimes it could be a matter of days and it's a good idea to do the Shalom Zachor because you don't know. It could be just as a two-day delay. Let's say the baby's jaundiced and maybe we'll see. Then it is a good idea to do the Shalom Zachor. If, God forbid, it might be something more serious, and then there has to be a longer wait. Sometimes people have the practice to wait a little bit before the bris, when they know when that bris will be as well. There are different perspectives of this. I'd like to perhaps close with just a thought, which is what are we supposed to be doing at the Shalom Zachor itself? And, you know, I see so many different sort of styles of how people do it. For some people, it's like, you know, a standing drinking party with, you know, a boys' club with lots of different color lights and alcohol of very expensive taste. That is great, and it certainly captures a aspect of it, but that's not really what it's supposed to be, right? A Shalom Zachor is meant to be a su'udah, and it's a su'udas mitzvah. And so the way a su'udas mitzvah is treated is that there should be Torah, There should be songs. People should be around the table. It's not just hanging out and drinking. It's the opportunity for people to be around the table and to talk about this, to relate the thanksgiving of this experience. If we're going according to Rabbi Natan, you know, every childbirth is a story, and it's never simple. It's never to be taken for granted. To appreciate all the steps that got all the dayenus that were received over here, and for people to say Divrei Torah, I think it's appropriate for the parents, the grandparents to say Divrei Torah if they're able to, if they're abonim to say Divrei Torah, for friends if they're able to say. Let it be a place where this child's first Shabbos in the world is going to be experienced as a true Shabbos, as a Shalom Zochor, remembering what it just lost. It's not much of a Nichum Avelim if it's just about 42%, right? Proof. So that's not what the child was missing in the womb. What the child was missing was this environment of being ensconced in a spiritual environment, which is what we're trying to recreate as well. And Be'ezrat Hashem, that should be a protection for the child as well. Abby, yes.
You want me to share something?
I would love to hear it. Abby, I always, always, always appreciate you.
I said this, and I'm not saying this is what the person who established Shalom Zohar had in mind, but perhaps something we can begin with. There are two mitzvahs that have a commonality in that there is a tree of chorus, and it says aseg. It's Nila Pesach. And in both cases, we observe the Shabbos before. And the question is why? There's a misconception. Misconception is the 7-day week is something from time immemorial. That is wrong. The Egyptians probably had a 10-day week. The Babylonians had a 7-day week, but it was lunar. It wasn't the cycle. You have a solar 7-day week, one again. The Romans, for example, had an 8-day week, but it shifted from place to place. So I said like this, imagine you were a Jew in Bayit Sheni. The entire rhythm of your life was off. The only analogy I can give is like, you do Shabbos one day on Tuesday, one day on Thursday. It sets Shabbos seven apart, not just because we have rest, because the rhythm of our life was totally different. And what better time to think about Shabbos than before the Bris and before Pesach,
which distinguishes us as human beings, as Jews. Beautiful, beautiful. Folks, if we didn't come just for that, that was worth being here as well. Abby, thank you always for sharing. So folks, I hope we just walk out. Some of this is more well known, some of this is much lesser known. But hopefully the next time we plan or participate in a Shalom Zachar, it will be with deeper meaning, Be'ezrat Hashem, and appreciation. Be'ezrat Hashem. Yashar Koach, thank you so much already for coming. One second, I gotta stop this.